wraps it up for another edition of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Our roving producer and producer of Flashpoints in Espanol is Miguel Gavilan Molina. Our technical director is Mike Biggs. For more information about the show, to listen to or download archived episodes, log on to flashpoints.net or visit our SoundCloud page at soundcloud.com/flashpoints. For questions or comments about Flashpoints, you can contact Dennis at dennisjbernstein@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.
And you've been listening to Flashpoints on KBOO Portland. Next up, it's the Recovery Zone. Today, your host, Stephanie Potter, speaks with hosts, organizers and volunteers with WOOF. Ari, Era, and Dan are here to tell you more about what that might be. They're from Rahane Forest Farm. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market, From Our Hands to Yours, celebrating 44 years of American arts and crafts, freshly prepared foods with an international flavor, and local music every Saturday and Sunday from March through Christmas Eve in Waterfront Park. Local artisans, international food, live music, PortlandSaturdayMarket.com.
Hi, you're tuned to KBOO Portland. I'm Stephanie Potter, and this is The Recovery Zone, a show focused on healing our world. Today, our focus is on a worldwide organization that was founded back in the 70s when a woman in England decided she wanted a chance for her and some of her friends to spend weekends on organic farms. This was the beginning of what's called the WOOF movement, W-W-O-O-F. The idea was to volunteer in exchange for room and board with no money changing hands. And one of my guests today, Era Atkins, was one of those early volunteers back in England. Since then, the program's grown tremendously, and Era has become a woofer host herself on a farm in Hood River with Dan Rowe, her partner. Both of them are here with me in the studio right now, and also one of her woofer volunteers, Ari Farrell from Rockville, Maryland. And Ari will be talking about what it's like to be a volunteer. And so I just want to thank all of you for coming. It's great to have you here.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess I'll start with Era. You were in England when this all started, and how did you find out about it?
Well, I was living in London at the time. I was in my early 20s, and I'd had a sort of background interest in agriculture. But I was doing a regular office life, and I heard about it, and I just sort of on a wild hair decided that I'd try it. And I went to a farm run by a man called Charles Dowding, who since then has become a pretty famous organic farmer in England. He's written books and whatnot. Anyway, I had a pretty intense experience. He had me out there in the field at 5 o'clock in the morning in the freezing cold, harvesting lettuce. He was an amazing farmer. He had huge fields of lettuce, and it was just him doing the work.
And just you
and
were
just
there.
Me.
Oh my goodness.
And we were out there at 5 o'clock in the morning cutting lettuce for the market in London.
And so you persevered, basically.
Yes. I mean, I'm not afraid of a bit of hard work. It certainly felt good afterwards getting inside and warming up. And it's satisfying. I love the idea of growing good food and helping make it available.
And you say he's gone on to become a world famous organic farmer.
Yeah, he's quite an icon of the organic movement in England now, and he's written books. I'm not recalling the name of them right now, but Charles Dowding.
And did you work on other farms besides his?
No, that was my one experience until all these years later. It has come full circle.
Oh, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and I'm probably sure you didn't expect to become a farmer yourself.
No, that was not not really.
Not in the cards.
No, not on the horizon.
Well, here you are. And you and Dan, you've got the farm going here. And Dan, are you doing this because Ari talked you into it? Era talked you into it?
Pretty much.
Pretty much. But it's happening and you're happy with it.
Yes, I've always been interested in agriculture and self-sufficiency.
And you guys have been woofing, or volunteers, have volunteers with you for 9 years now, right?
9 years, yeah. That's right.
And so, Ari, you're here as a volunteer. What? Yes. How did you find out about it?
The rain in particular?
Well, just woofing in general.
I remember walking through the woods one day and running into this guy who looked really blissed out. And I was like, hey, what are you doing? You know, what's up? And we started talking, and he was talking about his wolf experience, and I'd never heard of it before. I was like, that sounds awesome. I'm going to look into that. And at the time, I was in college, so I wasn't really sure what I was going to do after. But so my plan became, I'm going to wolf after college.
So you just Googled it and...
Yeah.
And said,
yeah,
okay,
it sounded like a great program.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it does, we're going to have to talk about what is it. And so, woofing in general, it's called the woof movement, but we want to know what woof stands for. And I'm looking it up, and it seems like it's got a bunch of different things it stands for.
Right. Well, the name has evolved.
Okay.
And it started off, when I was working first, it was weekend workers on organic farms.
Okay.
That was the WW, was the weekend workers.
Right.
But it's become an international organization, so it's now Worldwide Opportunities on Organic Farms.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And it's in 42 different countries now, and they formed another organization that's called WOFO, which is like the Federation of woofer organizations.
Of all these different countries all over the
world.
All
the different countries. So the countries are set up independently as the woof organizations are independent in each country, but they're collaborative.
Yeah.
So if people want more information, they could look up woofusa.org.
And that's WWOOF. USA.org.
Right. Or if you want more information about the international setup, then you can look up woof.net, WWOOF.net.
And it started in 1971 with a woman
That's
named
right.
Susan Coppard.
That's right.
And did you ever get to know her? Or?
No, not
no?
really.
Yeah.
No. I think I met her once briefly, but no, not really.
And the bigness of it, like I read, it's got like 10,000 members now or
yes.
something like that.
There's over 2,000 host farms.
Wow.
And I mean, you found out there were 10,000 members. I knew there were many thousands.
Yeah,
obviously,
thousands.
It's a fluctuating membership.
But it's really, really grown since
yeah.
that first little bit.
Yeah.
And basically, then how does it work? I mean, like if a volunteer wants to become a woofer, mm-hmm. what's the deal?
So you go online and you sign up, and for a woofer, it's $40 for a year.
It costs $40
mm-hmm.
okay.
for a year so that you have access to any farm in the country that you subscribe to. So it's per country. So I signed up for Woof USA, and then you just search. You can search all sorts of parameters, such as like what kind of farm it is, even down to dietary preferences. And also by state and by area. And then they show you all the farms in that area. And then you can research each farm. And then you reach out to people that you are interested in going to see and going to work with. And then it goes from there. It's kind of like online dating.
Yeah. So it's really, really thorough, though. I mean,
yeah.
It goes, so as a host, you mm-hmm. have to write up all this stuff about yourself, basically?
Yes, there's a profile
mm-hmm.
page.
Yeah.
So every farm has its profile page.
Yeah. As do the woofers. You also create your own profile page.
Right.
So typically what happens is someone will email us initially.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's up to the individual host how they proceed from there. Whether you continue to communicate by email. We always like to try and have a telephone conversation because
yeah.
it's so much easier to get a feel for each other
mm-hmm.
and have a more real connection.
With actual voices.
Yeah, you
definitely.
Can sort of feel each other out a little more.
Yeah. And what did it cost for you to sign up as a host?
It's a sliding scale for hosts. I think it's $25 to $50. It's something very reasonable.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, so for $50 and then you get free labor, basically? Except for you do provide room and board.
Yes, there's guidelines. I mean, You provide room and board, or in the summertime people will camp out at our place, but we do have a couple of indoor places where people can stay, and then we can. There's guidelines about the number of hours you work.
How many are the hours?
And so the WOOF organization recommends up to 6 hours a day, 5.5 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
But we tend to be fairly flexible. You know, it depends on the time of year, how the temperature outside, what hours we actually work.
So you have them year round, your woofers?
We usually have woofers from April through October or November.
Mm-hmm.
We have occasionally had people stay up till December as well.
Wow, Christmas.
Christmas. Yeah.
Yeah.
Helping to, process some of the herbs that we grow, and we grow a lot of heirloom varieties of beans as well. So.
Right. And so 5.5 days a week, maybe 6 hours, and maybe not so much depending on the farm.
Right.
Yeah.
And actually we just say 5 days a week, and mm-hmm. and we're very flexible because, you know, sometimes people need a day for themselves, and so we try to accommodate that, and then maybe they'll work an extra hour or two some other day. You know,
they're not actually clocking in.
They're not clocking in. Yeah. We're not watching the clock either. So it's very sort of natural and spontaneous.
Yeah, like a farm.
Yeah, just make it work.
Right, and they're all over the world. Each WOOF organization, and you said there's this federation now all over the world of WOOF organizations, has its own guidelines, or is it like, does the U.S. have different guidelines than, say, France or Togo? Or
yes.
Okay, how's that?
And frankly, I don't know all the details of the different countries, but you do have to sign up individually for each country.
Mm-hmm. And if someone wanted to go to a different country, have you ever had woofers from foreign countries yourself?
We've had woofers from England, Germany, Denmark, Sweden, France, China, Australia.
Japan.
Oh, pretty much
so,
everywhere.
Yes, so all over. But I have to say the majority come from the East Coast of the USA.
Texas. And where are you from, Ari?
From the East Coast of the USA.
Okay. Yes. What state?
Maryland,
okay. Yeah. And so all these different people, did they have to deal with immigration and visa stuff, or is that going to be getting worse with our present administration? Or
you know, people have to take care of that themselves. We have not gotten involved, and as far as I know, woofer hosts don't usually do that. Maybe some have to write a letter of sponsorship, I don't know, for certain countries. We haven't yet been impacted by the craziness that's going on in the world.
and health insurance, that was another thing I was wondering about. How does that work? I mean, do you have your own health insurance already?
Yeah, I have my own health insurance.
Because you guys don't provide
it. Woof farms are not expected to provide health insurance.
Uh-huh.
We do have a liability insurance, mm-hmm. which would cover the first sort of part of any emergency
mm-hmm.
expense, you know, ambulance or whatever, if there's somebody hurt themselves. So we do have some coverage for that.
We have first aid. First aid kit.
Yeah.
And some
in
first
case
aid
for
knowledge.
Splinters or things like that.
Yeah, yeah. And probably a lot of knowledge dealing with the first aid kits, but
a little bit.
Yeah.
And how about two other little thoughts I was wondering. What if people had children and wanted to be on a farm, a woofing farm? Like, I don't imagine you take children, but are there farms that take
children?
Yes,
when you go online and look at the farm profile, it will say whether they will host children, pets.
So that's a possibility.
A lot of people want to travel with a dog.
Yeah.
Occasionally a cat.
And old people can do it too.
Yes, we've had a couple of wonderful woofers who were in their 50s.
Uh-huh.
One of whom is still a close friend. So.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
And actually I saw that maybe one of the oldest woofers going was some guy who was 84, a woofer volunteer.
Great.
So I was like, okay, someday I'll do it too.
Okay, come on down.
Yeah. And so basically you're pretty happy with having your woofers on your farm, you're pretty happy being a woofer volunteer. We'll get more into that. But it's pretty amazing. I want to let listeners know now that you're hearing from Ara Atkins and Dan Rowe. They're partners who have a farm called Rahane Forest Farm in Hood River. And we also have one of their volunteers, a woofer volunteer, Ari Farrell. WOOF stands for Worldwide Opportunities on Organic Farms.
Although Rahane does have its own, the woofers at Rahane have their own definition.
Which is?
Willing weeders.
Willing weeders on organic farms. One of your big chores, I guess. Okay, and this is the Recovery Zone, your all-volunteer community radio station, KBOO Portland. You can call in with your questions or comments at 503-231-8187 and find out about if you want to be a woofer or if it might be up for you, or maybe a woof host. And so, Ara, you said you didn't really expect that one day you'd be a farmer. How did that happen?
It's a rather a roundabout way, but you know, I was really very sort of religious, philosophical minded person when I was younger. I actually lived and worked in India for the Theosophical Society for a few years. Mm-hmm. And after a while, I just became sort of disillusioned with this highfalutin philosophy that didn't really seem to be translating into people's relationships and how things were organized on the ground. And I realized I really didn't know the very first thing about how to survive as a human being on the earth. I didn't know where my food came from. I didn't know. I felt removed. It all seemed so intellectual. And so my initial impulse was to sort of get my hands in the dirt and find out, get something more real going.
Yeah. So. And after that experience as a woofer, You sort of realized that that was a possibility.
Yes, for you. I mean, something I always enjoyed. You know, my parents were gardeners, and I used to grow.
Where did you grow up in England?
In the southeast, in Surrey, south of London.
So in a town, basically.
It was sort of genteel suburbia. Yeah. You know, it was sort of fairly rural, not far from the countryside, but
Midsummer Murders or something.
Something like that. Yeah, you got it.
Okay.
So yeah, at that stage I was sort of growing sweet peas up the wall.
Right.
But I just what can I say? I just, for me, it's therapy to be out there in the garden and growing food. I feel like I need it for my sanity.
And did you guys hook up to start a farm together, or are you and Dan?
We met. Well, you go ahead.
We met on the coastal range, actually. Just kind of met over a firewalk, actually.
We were
doing a firewalk, and so we said, "Oh, fancy meeting you here," and hit it off, and that was 12 years ago or so.
And did you have this farm already, Dan, or did you guys?
No, this happened in 2007.
2005.
2005.
That's right.
That's right.
We met in the coastal range on this nature sanctuary, owned and run by friends.
And you were living in the U.S. by then.
Yes, I've been in the U.S. since 87.
Oh my goodness.
Yes.
Okay.
So we connected there at the nature sanctuary, and we'd been living there, and then we came up to Hood River to volunteer at a festival there. And when we got to Hood River, we were just, you know, this is where we want to be. It's the perfect climate.
Don't talk too much about that. Okay.
Okay. The very Congress.
Yes, okay.
Okay. We won't get too off into that
that's
world.
Fine.
But
yeah,
I mean, your hippie past. Okay.
But
anyway, so you were at a festival in Hood River, and then you decided to be part of a farm, which is the Rahane Forest Farm.
Right.
And you were invited onto that farm, I guess.
Exactly.
Right?
Well, we met Don Shaw, who had lived on that land since the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And
some of his films have actually been played here, or he's been here at the radio station.
Oh, great.
Yes, back in the early 2000s.
Sort of an early organic farmer.
Yes. Yeah. And a sustainable forester, because we are a forest farm. We steward 80 acres of mostly forested land. So he was a forester primarily with a large garden. And so he invited us up to live there with him and to carry on his philosophy of sustainability and of community-minded living. And we've expanded the garden, and every year with the help of woofers and their enthusiasm, we've just continued to increase the area that we cultivate. And this year with Ari and Ricky, they were very enthusiastic to do the farmers market. And so, you know, this is the first time that we've done that. I mean, we sold a little bit at the sort of community table, but thanks to Ari and Ricky, we're now doing the farmers market and growing a lot more food than we were before. So it's been a collaboration and a sort of natural evolution over years.
Yeah, and you're farmers now officially. And
we are.
And the fellow that invited you, he's no longer here. He died, right?
Don passed away in 2007.
And basically, you guys inherited the farm.
That's right.
Like, yeah.
He passed it on to a small group of friends, and so we've continued in the spirit with which he started it.
Great.
Yep.
Great. And when you guys are looking for a woofer, what sort of a person are you looking for? When, you know, you're listening on the phone, checking in with them, what did you hear in Ari, you know?
Well, we've, you know, over the years, we've had a lot of different experiences, and that has changed what we've been looking for. At first, we were very open and really were just wanted to host young people who seemed like they sincerely wanted to experience living close to the land in a sustainable environment. We're off the grid. And then we realized as time goes on that there's certain skills and attitudes that we appreciate and need more in order for us to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
So we've hosted a lot of young people who were wonderful help, but for them it was more of a way to travel and to see different areas and to have an experience of rural living, sustainable living, gardening, whatever. But with Ari and Ricky, they have some experience already working on a farm, and they had this passion, sincere passion, to work as to create a life for themselves as farmers. So we wanted to that was where we were at too, wanting to have young people working with us who were more
pretty
committed
dedicated
to that.
Yeah. I see, like on the woofer websites, it's things like, become a woofer, you can experience the world, you can travel, you can learn a foreign language, you can be in a beautiful tropical climate, or you can learn about farming. And I guess learning about farming is what you guys decided was the most important. And Ari, that was kind of pretty important for you.
Definitely.
Yeah. And
I mean, having people also, I mean, as a couple, they're a little more self-sufficient in a way.
Right,
that's
lonely.
Nice. Because, you know, when young people come to us, well, we have to be their social support system too,
right.
You know, especially if they're traveling without a vehicle.
Right.
You know,
right.
Then there's a lot more dependency. And we've certainly enjoyed a lot of that too, but we were ready for someone a little more autonomous.
So are you there with Ricky, your partner?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
and the two of you kind of came together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it sounds like a lot of flexibility though in terms of what you're able to deal with and stuff like that. It's just that different hosts have very different specific agendas, it sounds like too, because there's, you know, I read like it could be soap making or it could be weeding. That seems to be a biggie, you know, but herding sheep. I mean, there's all kinds of different
situations people can find themselves in. Yes.
Yeah.
I think there are production farms where they need just like extra hands for picking berries, rows and rows of berries. And, you know, that fits very well with young people maybe who just want to, well, not just, but who want to travel and don't necessarily want to become farmers, but they want to have the experience of being on a farm for a few weeks or a season.
Right.
So the thing with woofing is to find the fit.
Right.
To find what, mm-hmm. you know, because there's also a lot of small homesteads, couples with a large garden who want help.
Oh, I could have a woofer at my house dealing with my yard.
Well, you know, there are quite a few people who push the farm definition boundary
a
little bit.
We have a garden.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's the main thing, I think, with woofing is to be clear about what you're looking for and ask lots of questions.
And a woofer can be there for a weekend or 2 weeks, or is there a minimum stay?
You get to say to say what you want on uh-huh. your profile. We usually, what we like to do is have a couple of people who want to come for the whole season, who are more focused on the agricultural part.
And the real farming.
The real farming. And that sort of forms a matrix so that we can then also host a few other people who maybe are more traveling and exploring, younger people maybe.
Who come maybe and stay less time.
Exactly.
They're looking maybe for a variety of farms, or they want a variety of different experiences.
Right.
And you have different woof farms even in, you're out in the Hood River, there's other woof farms even out there, right? Like,
That's part of the, I think Hood River is a bit of a woofer's paradise, actually.
Oh, yeah? But,
well, there's at least five other farms that I know of, and I heard that there's up to 10. But one of our friends and neighbors who also hosts woofers, every Friday we have a potluck with all the woofers in mm-hmm. the valley. Well, they're all invited
Every Friday?
Every Friday.
Wow.
Well,
we skip it.
It's a great way for everybody to get together and share their experiences and make connections.
Really? And then it's sort of like the Indian wampum party. Or so you get together with other woofers and compare notes and, oh, I wish I was on your farm. And things like that.
Yep.
Yeah, well, that's neat. And so you said that some of them haven't quite worked out. What makes a less than stellar experience? Can you maybe describe one?
Uh-oh.
Well, yeah, we've got a few stories. You know, we've always had the attitude that, you know, we want to be of service. And maybe certain personalities are more challenging than others. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, we've all in this world got to learn how to get along one of these days. And so we don't mind occasionally if certain personalities have some rough edges, and we figure we're just going to help
deal with it.
Help sand each other's edges off.
But you never actually kicked a woofer off your farm or anything?
We have said to a couple of people that we didn't feel like it was the best fit.
Uh-huh.
We always say, let's try it out for a week before we commit to anything longer term. And that's pretty common, I think, for woof hosts, before you commit to a long-term experience. Because you want it to be a good fit. I mean, if the personalities don't mesh, then there's no point in persevering when it's not comfortable all around. But generally, I would say we've met so many wonderful people, and it's been really inspiring for us and energizing for us, not just to have the actual help, but
if we can get 80% to 85%, we're happy. That are real compatible.
He's the numbers guy.
Okay, gotcha. And you haven't had like you say, you've even formed friendships that have gone into time.
And we have quite a few return woofers too.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah.
And what makes someone like become a friend? It's just that you guys just share the philosophy and stuff very strongly.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you know,
most everybody is just wonderful people. You know, those are the kinds of people you want to have as your friends. Adventurous and open-minded and loving people.
Mm-hmm. And pretty much committed to a healthy planet and a healthy way of doing things. And
philosophically aligned.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Again, I want to let listeners know you're tuned to KBOO Portland. I'm Stephanie Potter. You're hearing from Era Atkins and Dan Rowe. They host a farm at Rahane Forest Farm in Hood River for woofers. And WOOF stands for Worldwide Opportunities on Organic Farms. Ari Farrell. Yeah. And Ari Farrell is here also, and she's their WOOF volunteer. You can call in with your questions or comments about WOOFing at 503-231-8187. And so, Ari, again, you said that you wanted to do it. You started out, you chose a country, which was the mm-hmm. U.S. What made you want to be in the U.S. and not someplace else?
Well, I figured I'd want to explore my own country first. Uh-huh. And, you know, I had the idea of the big U.S. road trip.
Yeah.
So I wanted to do that after college. And I just kind of wanted to, like, see the country and see where I wanted to land.
Yeah.
And put roots down. So, yeah, I started traveling the country, and I had an idea about Oregon. Mm-hmm. So I came out here, and I fell in love with it pretty immediately.
And you started out, you've been on another WOOF farm as well as mm-hmm. Rahane.
What
was that?
I was at Bioway in South Carolina.
Uh-huh.
It was a larger production farm. Mm-hmm. It was a very different experience. It was a lovely experience, but it didn't feel like a home that I could stay in for very long. But it was mm-hmm. good. It was good. And my experience before that was as an intern on a farm up in Pennsylvania called Farm of Peace. And that was where I learned how to do everything farm-wise. You know,
right.
we worked sunrise to sundown.
Wow.
6 days a week. So.
And that was a volunteer thing too.
That was a job.
Actually got paid.
Yeah. So I was there, and me and my partner Ricky, we were like, at this point, we're like, okay, are we gonna stay here or are we gonna go and start making our own lives for ourselves.
Right, checking things out.
Yeah, yeah, so that's what inspired the road trip, and yeah.
And then you ended up in Oregon, and mm-hmm. So basically that's just been for the last few years you've been living like this then?
Just the past year and a half or so.
Uh-huh.
Before uh-huh. that, you know, I had other jobs. I was in college for a while.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And what made you choose Era's farm?
So we kind of zoned in on Hood River somehow. Something about Hood River called to us. And after talking to Era, I felt a connection pretty immediately. And mm-hmm. I don't know. It just seemed like the right place to be. And as soon as we got into the property, we knew.
Sounds like we have a caller. Ben, what would you like to ask?
Hi. I actually wanted to make a comment. I love your show, for one. It's been awesome and informative hearing your story. But also, there's another natural building. I'm a builder, and I have had really good experiences with the Push, POOSH, and I just wanted to get that name out there, too, because that's something that I really value and has been really important to me.
Push, and exactly, is that's another sort of thing like WOOFer, like where people go out and just volunteer?
Yeah, totally. And there's like WOOFing, there's a lot of different levels that people engage at, whether it's weekend or long term, and a lot of different natural building projects as well, like from timber framing to cob building and straw bale and all kinds of stuff.
Or tiny houses or whatever.
Yeah, that too.
How about solar?
Yeah, definitely multiple energy. I mean, it's like ground up, so it's definitely user dependent. Whatever the people's project is what's going on.
That's great. And this call, how do you spell that? P-U-S-H?
P-O-O-S-H.
Oh, P-O-O-S-H. Okay.
And it's the push.org.
What does that stand for? Okay, we'll just call it push.
Yeah, the push.
Okay, well, thanks. That really, Ben, that's...
Yeah, and thanks for your show, too.
Good info, yeah. Okay, so everybody, we've got push and woof now. It's changing. We've got a lot of O-O's going on. Okay, so back to be at Rahane's farm, mm-hmm. the Rahane farm. You've been there since when now?
Since May.
Since May. Mm-hmm. And let's talk about... a typical day. What do you do?
Well, it really depends on the season, and also all of our, you know, moods that day or that week. We usually wake up and we start around like 8:30. Mm-hmm. That's usually the time that we start. We meet upstairs in a common space and we talk about our goals for the day and like what we're gonna do. And then we go out and do it. It could be anything. We have our hands in everything from weeding to planting to getting things ready for winter. Pretty much every, yeah, every, there's really no typical day.
No typical day.
No. The only typical day is that we're going to be there.
Yeah.
We're going to wake up there.
And the farming itself is, that's, you as a forest farm, like, could you explain more what that actually means? Like I interviewed once a woman, Karen Olson, about the soil will save us, and her whole notion was how fungal mats under the ground can, is that the kind of thing that you're doing?
Well, to be clear, we're not like, at this point, we're not like a permaculture forest garden where you have the fruit trees as your overstory, and then you have your berries, your shrubs as the understory, and then your ground covers beneath that. We do a little bit of that in spots in the on the edge of the forest, but our garden is really, I mean, we're a forest garden because we're right next to and surrounded by the
a big giant forest.
Right. But we do a lot of permaculture techniques. We mulch and we mulch and yes, as you said, forming those mycelium, creating a healthy environment for the mycelium, because healthy plants, it's all about the soil, and it's all about the relationship between the plants and the soils and the soil organisms, the bacteria and the mycelium. So we're very aware of that being really the source of our well-being.
Right. I just saw a headline that you can replace trees, but you can't replace a forest. You know.
Yeah.
So I was thinking that there's something going on like that, if you keep the forest very interconnected and healthy.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that you can grow food in a forest.
You can.
Yeah.
You can. I mean, there are limitations. There's certainly limitations according to light. There's certain plants that just have to have a certain amount of light,
right?
And so that that's a limiting factor.
And so for you, so this is your first forest farm, I guess. What would you say you've been learning since you've come here?
Oh man, I've learned a lot. The past farms I've been on have been more about production, and have been a lot more about doing things really quickly, really efficiently. Lots of weeding, lots of planting, just get it done really, really fast.
But all are still organic.
No poison at all. Yeah. No, it's still good. You know, still very important to do it that way in order to create a lot of food for people.
Right.
But Rahane is a lot more about the health of the soil and about our own health, you know, and it's more about community. And that's what I really love about it. It feels better to me than to be rushing all day.
Right.
It's like, it doesn't feel so much like work. It feels more like just a life.
Like living.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just living.
Yeah. That sounds good. I mean, it sounds like you feel like you're just very connected to just, I sometimes had this feeling that, or I could get this feeling of being perched, you know, in my life, as opposed to just being very settled and in, you know. And what you guys are sort of describing to me is the opposite of being perched. You're kind of just entrenched in a way.
Yeah, you're in the dirt, literally.
Yeah. and in your lives and in this, your life doesn't have any edges to it. It's just all, you know, it's not like, okay, at 6 o'clock this happens and at 9 o'clock that. It's everything is a kind of fluid being there. You know?
Yeah, it's a lot more like that. And then also another thing that I've really learned about is sustainable living. Like in homesteading, in the past, you know, I've never lived off the grid before. So learning all about the solar energy and where we get our water, just knowing where we literally get every single thing that sustains us and seeing it, and it's there and it's created right there.
Right. So you guys are off the grid.
We're off the grid.
Great.
But I just wanted to chip in one thing, just, you know, a nod to our ancestor here. Because Don Shore, I always think of his, one of the first things he admonished me for being in the garden very long hours one day. He's like, round days. You need to have round days.
Oh,
and
wow.
So we try to hold to that idea that everybody needs to take time for their art, time for reading, educating themselves, time to wander in the woods as well as the work, you know, the daily chores,
right.
quotes chores,
right.
and things that we need to keep everything going,
right?
To make sure that our lives are balanced in that way.
Yeah, and you feel like that too, Dan? Basically, just totally,
yes.
yeah, really,
Absolutely.
Just connected in.
Absolutely.
I mean, building that connection with the place, developing that sense of place and connectedness with the land that we're on. For us, it's bigger than just us. It's, you know, it's central to our to what inspires us and keeps us going is this underpinning that, you know, beyond organic, you know, we're truly going to build something that's sustainable. We need to learn how to deepen our relationships
right.
with the environment that
right.
we're in.
It may be the only thing that saves us is starting at the local
yeah.
level and working out from there.
And really, really getting like you're connected to the other woofer farms, you're connected to the land
yeah.
itself, you're connected to the people who are living on your land. Just this sense of a web of connection that is local but very powerful.
Exactly.
And, yeah.
I mean, Hood River Valley is amazing. There's, you know, we've got a very strong local Grange, the Rockford Grange, which does some great events. We've started a seed bank there, actually, at the farm. We grow
wow.
a lot of the heirloom varieties of beans for that seed bank.
Right.
And so we do a seed share every spring. And actually, coming up on November 4th, there's going to be a Fill Your Pantry event at the Rockford Grange, which is on that Saturday afternoon, November 4th, yep, coming up Saturday after next. Maybe I shouldn't tell too many people, because last year we were absolutely inundated.
Oh, well.
Yes, it's very exciting. It's a very fun one-day event. But we're trying to, you know, expose our woofers also to the wider community and the need for building community.
Yeah,
where we are.
Yeah, yeah. KBOO community radio station.
Right.
Community, where it's at.
It's all about community.
Yeah, and that's another aspect of all this. I mean, the philosophy of it. One of the big philosophies of it was non-monetary. You know, you're not paying your woofers,
no.
but you're fine with that, Ari, right?
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I get, you know. Place to stay,
uh-huh.
and food. Yeah,
but
what
you
else do you
like
need?
A slave.
No. Oh my gosh, so far from it.
And we yeah. generate some income at the farmers
yeah.
market.
Uh-huh.
That we share.
Uh-huh.
We just split it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So that works.
Yeah.
Well, Ricky
yep.
and I kind of have started our own operation that Era has been so generous to like support us in and provide us with the land for. So we are actually growing our own separate garden now
uh-huh.
for the market. And we plan on expanding next year as well.
And what are you growing?
Everything. As much as we can. Yeah, and we're calling ourselves The Forest Garden, and we're on Instagram at Forest Garden Hood River, all one word.
Cool.
So you can
selling
see what we're doing.
Selling it to restaurants and selling
yeah, it. Yeah, and markets.
And, yeah, the Hood River Farmers Market.
Right.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Yeah, it's really fun.
Yeah.
And we're starting a collaborative CSA
mm-hmm.
next year. For people
to buy
direct
from
it's
us.
Not monetary in the sense of there's some salary that you're getting, but it is
yeah we're making our own. It's like having your own business
yeah.
you know, and just
yeah.
making enough to, you know, buy your groceries
yeah
and whatever else you need, you
and
know?
That but that's not probably typical of most woofer farms.
No, it's not a monetary
Mm-mm.
exchange
yeah.
and that's part of the sort of the joy of it, really.
Mm-hmm.
It's non-consumerism. It's
mm-hmm.
it's non-corporate.
Non-corporate.
And it's a chance for people to sort of unplug, unhook from the mainstream and see that actually you can live very well on the land. You can be independent. And you can create the life that you want for yourself.
Yeah.
It's not that difficult.
Yeah.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
the main obstacles these days are accessibility of land for young people. Because, I mean, there are so many young people who are interested in growing food
mm-hmm.
and in living sustainably and going back to the land. But that is the, in a way, that's the block. And so that was part of what Don Shaw passed on to us and what we are committed to passing on for next generations too, is the access to the land.
Right, right.
Get away from this idea of being, quotes, landlords or landladies, and have, you know, get away from that money. Get back to relationships.
Right, right. Wow, I mean, I just have this vision of if we could just take up all the big ag farms, you know, and turn them into the kind of things that you guys are doing, you know. Oh, what a different sort of whole feel to the country there'd be. Yeah.
I mean, and there are different ways of doing it. There are many ways of doing it. I mean, I wouldn't want to... I think small is more viable, but, you know, maybe there is a way for there to be a large farm that produces and
organic,
is sustainable.
At least.
But would have to be organic, but anyway.
Anyway, once again, I'm speaking with Era Atkins and Dan Rowe, Era was one of the first volunteers with WWF back in the 70s in England, and she and Dan now host WWFers at Rahane Forest Farm in Hood River. She's here, she and Dan are here with Ari Farrell, who's one of their WWFer volunteers. And Ari came with her partner, Ricky. And another meaning of WWF is Willing Workers on Organic Farms. This is the Recovery Zone on your community radio station, KBOO Portland. You can call in with your questions or comments at 503-231-8187. So basically, I wanted to know, like, you do sort of see yourself continuing to do this, right, Ari?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And where would you say you might be, like, say, 10 years from now or 5 years from now? Or what's your fantasy?
Who knows? I would like to continue to live in community and continue to farm and wherever that takes me.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and continue to just, you know, develop as a person.
Do you think you might ever end up in a foreign country doing this? Or you're pretty much settled in America?
Maybe. Right now, yeah. I would love to travel.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Travel outside the country a little bit more.
I mean, I saw Togo, you could be tree planting.
Yeah.
You know, making cheese in France. Or,
yeah. Oh, I'd love that.
There seems to be a lot of different ways this can happen. And then I had this thought, what if WWFing were like a mandatory service? You know, like, you know how we have the military service.
Sure.
What if we had a WWFing mandatory service, you know?
I think that's brilliant. I mean, we need to know where our food comes from.
Important.
And we need to know where our water comes from.
Yeah.
And we need to know where our poop goes to.
Yeah.
And
right.
All of that.
Right.
I mean, it's...
Right.
Seems like basic training, doesn't it?
So it seems like... Yeah, there is this way that WWFing could be something that would just change everything if it could be, but it is growing, you say.
Oh, it's huge. Yeah. I mean, you know, it really makes you aware of the fact that, you know, makes me think that the vast majority of people are actually interested in sustainability. Wouldn't
it
you say,
like
Ari?
Yeah, my generation for sure, but maybe that's just my bubble, you know?
Right.
Yeah, it's hard to
be objective. I don't know. It seems like everyone I know is interested in farming, but...
Yeah. Well, we are in our sort of different bubbles, aren't we?
We are, but I think that's part, you know, we've been kept... The system has kept us separated. And it keeps us on a, you know, it sort of furthers this idea that it's all so difficult and so far away. But the reality is that it's happening. Sustainability, so many farms.
Right.
So many people involved with this. It's a huge movement.
Right.
Internationally.
Right. Tens and tens.
And I think we really need to claim our power.
Yeah. Yeah. And reclaiming our power basically would look like what then?
It would look like having the confidence, I think an underlying confidence that what we're doing is the important work and that it's not fringy. We're not the fringe, actually.
I like that.
That's a big illusion.
Yeah.
We're actually the heart of the new way of life that's coming up on the earth. The new way of life that happens to be the old way of life, of course.
Right.
But
recovery.
It's the
We're recovering.
We are recovering. We're regaining. We're restoring.
Yeah.
A healthy social order that's based on our relationship with the earth.
Yeah. That's a huge part of the philosophy of it, isn't it?
Yeah.
that we have to reconnect. My guest last week was basically saying the exact same thing, that Scott Clues, and he makes herbal remedies and stuff, you know, and goes out into the woods and connects with the plants and stuff. Oh, but it sounds like it's the same thing that I keep hearing, is that until we realize that we're actually beings, animals on this planet that have to live the way that we used to live in certain ways. I mean, we can still probably have computers and email, but that there's a Absolutely. Certain basic humanness that we have to get back in touch with.
Yeah.
And that's basically what you guys are all about, it mm-hmm. sounds like.
Yeah, we try to incorporate sort of primitive skills, sustainable technologies, you know. We had a lot of fun last summer building a cob oven. We also expanded our solar array, and we have a friend staying at the farm who builds tiny homes, and has a little solar panel on, a little windmill, and so coming up with simple, sustainable technologies that we can use. I mean, we're not against computers. In a way, you could say a computer is... it's organic too. It comes from the earth. It's all about how we use everything. So,
right.
But we also try to teach these ancient skills. Like Ari and Ricky, a friend came and taught us some basketry this summer. So that was fun.
Yeah,
it's really fun.
Yeah.
And when I was out there, you have this huge pond. That mm-hmm. And what are you doing with that?
Well, we put it in. To give us a backup water supply, because we rely on a spring uh-huh. for our water. And so there's always been a little pond there, but we expanded it. And so that we'd have more water available for a gravity-fed irrigation at the end of the summer when the flow on the spring decreases, but also for fire. Fire right. secure, so that we have mm-hmm. a large amount of water that we can pump if there's a
And
fire.
Were you guys impacted at all by these huge fires this summer?
We are on the western edge of the civilization there. And so
of the Hood River Valley.
The Hood River Valley.
So yeah. It was a couple of miles away.
We had about 2 weeks of smoke.
2 weeks, yeah. Yeah, so did Portland.
Yes, the smoke was so... We could say we kind of dodged a bullet. It could have been a lot worse. Right towards the end, it was a race to see who would get here first. The wind was carrying the fire and also the rain. So luckily the rain
landed.
Out.
Yeah,
we were on level 2 evacuation alert, which was, you know, be ready to go at any moment.
Wow.
For over a week.
Wow.
So, yeah.
We were all packed up.
And you weren't planning on just staying there and using your water pond to, like, fight the flames?
No, we were leaving.
I mean, you know, we are surrounded by forest.
Yeah.
And we didn't want anybody to be risking their lives to save us.
Right,
so
like, right.
No, we try to be responsible.
Right.
But yeah, tempting.
Yeah,
we thought for a minute, well, we'll just jump in the pond.
Right.
But then our five firefighting friends suggested that we do not do that. That if something's coming up the hill, if the fire is coming towards you, it'll boil the water in your pond. I mean,
wow.
it's that intense.
Yeah.
The way they move.
Yeah. Well, those fires were, and now they're down in Southern California. Fires are just part of this whole changing climate that is also probably something you guys are trying to have an impact on in your own way. You know, stop the climate change.
Yes. Well, you know, the land around us, a lot of the land around us is owned by the county, Hood River County, mm-hmm. which relies on the forestry income for a lot of the county funding, which is a pretty crazy system, obviously.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of clear cutting around us. And so this year we're finding there's a certain wildlife that we're just inundated with.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's been a record year for squirrels and chipmunks.
Because they have no place to go besides you guys.
I think that's part of it,
wow.
at least.
Wow.
Yeah.
Maybe there's less predators that
that's probably
right.
keeping the population in control.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, the changes are crazy. And so do you have advice for people then, any of you, for people who are considering doing this?
Jump in.
I would say go for it and then do your research. You know, do your due diligence and see where you're going and have a backup plan. Make sure to talk to the people that you're going to live and work with someone.
Right.
So you want to make sure that you're going to a place that is a good fit for you. You know, I've had some friends who go to a farm and all they do is housekeeping, you know. So it's like you really, or and then other people who go and all they do all day is just packaging, you know. So it depends on what you want to do, you know. Read the comments. There are comments on every farm.
How does that work?
So when you woof somewhere, when you leave, you have an option to leave a review and a rating for the farm.
Ah.
So, yeah, there's all sorts of comments, and they're not all good, you know.
Right.
So, I mean, that was something I was really looking for, is a place that had good comments and gave an idea of what the time there would be like.
So that was part of your choosing Raheen?
Yeah. Yeah. Lots of 5-star comments.
Lots of 5-star comments. Good.
Yeah.
And so those are on the website, the comments, mm-hmm. and people can look at those, mm-hmm. and they can talk. They don't have to just email. You can call people and find out what they're like.
It's always great to call. It's always great to hear someone's voice.
Yeah. Yeah. And then just see how that goes. Mm-hmm. And any sort of, you know, like you have to, what sort of things did you feel like you had to bring with you when you came?
Just the things that you need in your everyday life. Good work clothes that you don't mind getting dirty, because once your clothes get dirty, it's pretty much impossible to get them clean again.
Yeah,
oh, you know, like with like dirt stains and everything,
yeah,
grass stains.
Yeah, yeah.
Good work boots, you know, weather appropriate clothing, all of that.
Sunscreen, good hat.
Sunscreen, good hat.
If you've got like very specific food needs, mm-hmm. take a little bit of what you're used to with you.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
If you need your cup of coffee Maybe. Every morning, make sure you got some coffee with you. I don't know.
Yeah. And just check in.
Obvious stuff. You know.
Just check in with your host and see what they provide. You know, some hosts will provide most everything you need, mm-hmm. aside from clothing and personal items. And then some places you need to, you know, provide your own tent or your own bedding.
Right.
So,
So it's like a step up from, like, say, couch surfing, in that you're actually going to do some work.
Yeah.
But it's a free place to mm-hmm. really find out about what it's like in this place, what it's like to be doing this kind of farming, and mm-hmm. you learn a lot of stuff, basically.
Yeah. Every place you'll learn something different.
Yeah. Yeah. And you just learn about the people that you're with, if nothing else.
Yeah, and that's always fun.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly you need to have an attitude of being willing to sort of jump in and join in and help with what needs doing.
It looks like we have one last call. Alan, if you could just do it quick. What's up? Alan?
You know, I really do like what you're saying, and it's obviously a very narrow view with the amount of people who are actually doing the kind of things you're doing, but there's always hope that there's a bigger thing that's going to happen. Right now, you've got 1% of the population involved in farming, 9% involved in manufacturing, and 90% of our economy is service. So you can see how many people that are involved in farming is a very small amount. And when you think about Monsanto or all the big corporations that are running the agricultural systems in this country, look at you like you're an ant.
Yeah.
Like you're just a bug. So, you know, of course, what we really do need is recyclable energy. And that doesn't come from you. I think where it really comes from is from eventually you'd think that the voters of this country would wise up and vote for progressive measures. And once you do that, and you can get climate change and the type of energy that is renewable, and you really go into...
I think you really have a point, but we're running out of time here. We got like 1 minute left.
Yeah, all right, just respond.
Thanks. Yeah, okay, respond
Thank
to
you.
That. Quick.
quick response. So there's more insects on the earth than anything else, I think. Isn't that right?
Yeah.
I think there's more species of beetles. Maybe we're not ants, we're beetles. there's an awful lot of us out there. Well,
the point is well taken.
Yes.
Though that this is an enormous problem, and we try to send the people. Yes, everybody does their bit, like you say, and send the people back to where they can go back to their communities and start things like this going and host other woofers and
keep hope alive in some weird way.
And any time that you reclaim your basic needs for yourself and create them yourself, it's a political act. So.
Yeah.
Well said.
Yeah, I mean, of course, there's way more that needs to be done, but this is part of what needs to be done, is basically what I'm hearing. Yeah. And you've been hearing, the listeners out there, you've been hearing from three woofers, host Era Atkins of Rahan Farm with her partner Dan Rowe, and Ari Farrell, who's is a woofer volunteer. You've been listening to the Recovery Zone on KBOO Portland. I'm Stephanie Potter. I want to thank Tammy Dean for her fine engineering, and thank you for listening.
KBOO Portland, it's 12 o'clock.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to present David Barsamian, Resistance in the Age of Trump, on Sunday, November 12th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. Journalist, author, and activist David Barsamian will be speaking about the broad coalition in opposition to the Trump administration, which includes activists from a range of causes, progressive Democrats, and concerned Republicans. He'll be reflecting on the core issues at stake today and why so many people from such a range of identities and perspectives are challenging the administration. Again, that's KBOO Presents David Barsamian, Resistance in the Age of Trump, on Sunday, November 12th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.